Hi, you're listening to Youth Beat Radio. My name is Anna Siriano. Today, contributor Chloe Yang will talk to Kristen Arnold about the ways youth from across the United States are working together to make positive environmental changes in their states and throughout the nation. But first, I am talking to an Ohio State student, getting her perspective on everything each.
My name is Huda Hosseini, and I am an architecture major.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit about your heritage and family background? Like, where's your mom from? Where's your dad from? And about, like, kind of where you grew up.
So both of my parents are from Cairo, Egypt, and they're actually second cousins. So they're related. And they weren't very close growing up, but, like, close enough because they're cousins. But my dad, he'd always liked my mom growing up, but, like, he didn't tell her, and she was actually going to get married to some other guy, and it was actually a bit of luck because the person who my mom was going to marry, she was marrying him, but she wasn't, like, completely in love with him, but when she found out that my dad was interested, she, like, completely switched tracks and, like, is like, yes, so it's really cute, actually. When my parents got married, they actually moved to Michigan because my dad was still studying, and he was studying at Wayne State there. And then from Michigan, they moved to Guelph in Canada, which is this really small city, like middle of nowhere. And he got his doctorate degree from there. And then they moved here to Columbus, Ohio, where he got a job offer, and we've been here ever since.
Okay. So what are your earliest memories with, like, the concept of, like, Egypt and, like, being Egyptian?
My parents definitely made it a point to raise us up as if we were being raised in Egypt, because they very much liked the cultural identity that they had growing up there. And so as we were growing up, our first language wasn't English, but it was actually Arabic. And I didn't actually learn English until I started interacting with the world around me. And we were always told, like, you know, we're Egyptian and we're Muslim, and we live in America, but you also have another country that you, like, you can call your home. And they made it a point to send us there. We would go there on summers regularly. So they really wanted to have us have that connection with, like, our family that still live there and, like, the country as a whole, as it's such a different culture and, like, environment than anything you can possibly imagine having here in Columbus.
How was it kind of trying to keep your own culture, like, throughout your life and not, like, totally assimilate and just become, like, standard American or whatever?
It definitely actually, it's funny because a lot of people my age and a lot of my friends who grew up in sort of the same circumstance had, are having sort of identity issues. Like, are they Egyptian, or are they Palestinian, or are they Syrian, or are they American? And it's very difficult, actually, to maintain that balance of, like, what are you more of? And to each person, it's their own individual decision on, like, what they're going to end up becoming. But for me personally, I think the more I grew up and, like, the more I realized what I wanted to take from each culture, the more I was able to become my own person. So I can't say that I'm completely, like, 100% Egyptian, nor can I say that I'm completely 100% American, because I've had influences from both sides.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what are the kinds of tradition, culture, food of Egypt that you kind of grew up around? You said it's far different from anything we can even imagine here. So, like, what is that like?
Well, in terms of culture, there's a very big emphasis on family. For example, my mom, her entire family lives in an apartment building. Like, my grandpa had built an apartment, and each floor is designated to, like, a certain member of the family. So, like, my mom and my dad bought an apartment in the apartment building, and then my grandma has an apartment, and my aunt has an apartment. But the food is spectacular. Oh my gosh, I can't. It's so good. It's really rich. So if you're not much for rich food, then Egyptian food might not be for you. But it's very lots of flavors and a lot of like technicalities when it comes to cooking. So if you want to make like a certain pasta dish, then you have to like learn how to make the pasta a certain way and the sauce a certain way. But Egyptian food in general is pretty good. A big part of Egyptian culture, it's sort of like a first-hand thing. You have to go and experience it for yourself. But there's a lot of emphasis on music. There's a big music and cultural, like, in terms of the arts scene in Egypt. A lot of my Egyptian friends, that's all they care about. Hollywood is, like, nothing to them compared to, like, the Egyptian cultural scene.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about just visiting Egypt, like, when you were younger, when you went, like, every other year, every year.
I think one of my favorite things about visiting Egypt is the fact that you don't really need to have a car to, like, move from point A to point B, which is what you get in a lot of big cities. And so I love the independent feeling that you have when you go there. I've lived in Cairo. Whenever I go visit, I live in Cairo. There's literally at every single corner, like, a little stand that sells, like, soda and gum and, like, really basic house things like tea and sugar and flour. And so, like, if you want gum, you don't have to go all the way to the grocery store. And there's also just, like, this sort of, when you go to Egypt, there's, like, this liveliness and, like, there's so much life and, like, excitement going around everywhere you look. And because Cairo is so big and it's so densely populated, there's so much to see. So you feel very crowded, but you feel almost like as if you're at home and, like, you know, everybody's your family. We travel often within Egypt, so we're located in Cairo, but we also go often to Alexandria and the North Coast, where there's a lot of, like, resort types of places. If you're going to be visiting Egypt, definitely make a point to go to the North Coast. I mean, Cairo is really, like, lively and fun. It's a big city, and, like, the Nile is amazing, but the North Coast and, like, the Mediterranean has, like, the bluest oceans, and, like, you look at the water, and you're like, is that real? Is that water really real? It's so beautiful.
This is Youth Beat Radio.
Okay, so obviously with, like, the revolution just happened in Egypt and all the change that's going there, what was your, like, experience associated with that?
I was definitely at first very concerned about my family, like, worried that, like, anybody would be hurt or that somebody, like, you know, would get caught up in, like, the middle of the mess, especially because I have younger guy cousins who are not as reserved in terms of, like, their opinion. But thankfully nobody got hurt that I know. And I was just really excited, actually, for the revolution, just because, like, going there and you see the despair of the people and you see how poor everybody is and how corrupt the government system is and how, like, you can't really talk about it. The whole country was in trouble and there was nothing anybody could do about it. And so, like, when you finally believe there might be a possibility of hope, some sort of change, like, it was such a great feeling. And I have actually a friend who went during the middle of the, like, he was here and he was like, I have to go, I have to, like, go fight, like, for my country, I have to go, like, be a part of this. And he went, and the stories he tells me of the people, like, fighting against the soldiers and, like, not moving from the middle of Tahrir Square, like, just fighting with everything they have because literally they had nothing to lose. The one thing that, like, really, like, touched me, the fact that, like, people my age were, like, creating this much change. And I think what made the youth want to, like, take charge of this revolution and, like, you know, do whatever means possible to create change is because this is their future and this is the future of, like, all of their friends and, like, of their family and their, if they have kids, of their, like, this is the future that they have to live in. And so it's a lot more encouraging to, like, fight for something that directly affects you. And with such a big population that needs that change, and with the youth having so much energy and, like, desire to make that change, it was incredible to watch because it sort of makes you have hope that, no, if somebody wants to achieve something, they can definitely do it.
Okay. So do you think that your parents may have had, like, a different perception of the revolution than you did? Did they share any other opinions or anything about that?
I think my parents definitely were more emotionally attached than I perhaps might have been, just because they also grew up in that world, and like, they moved away from it when they got married. But for me, it's only been my, like, small encounters as I go during summers. I think they were very emotionally touched that, like, their country was finally going to be liberated. I'm very excited to see, like, what goes with the Egyptian, like, you know, revolution, and how the country picks up itself and like, turns out after, like, a couple of years from the revolution. There's still a long road for the country to be whole again, but, I mean, it's definitely headed in the right direction.
Only hold till your coffee. Can you kind of go through maybe your early childhood experience, high school experience, and experiences you came to OSU in relation to, like, the fact that, you know, you have to wear hijab, and whether that affected you throughout your life and how you dealt with that?
I started wearing the hijab entering my sixth grade year, so between elementary and middle school. And that was because I did hit puberty, and that's when you're supposed to start wearing it. But I was very, very lucky to have a really supportive, like, group of friends and a great school that, like, nobody ever bothered me. And growing up in Upper Arlington, I was very sheltered. Very, very sheltered. And, I mean, I'm very blessed in the sense that I didn't really face much discrimination when I first started wearing it. Like, the only real incident that I ever had was once in my junior year. I was coming to take a photograph of my friend's dad, who plays the bagpipes at St. John's Arena. And he was playing for the homecoming of a lot of soldiers from Iraq. And so I was there with my camera bag, and my camera bag is black. And this security guard comes up to me, and he's like, "If you don't mind, miss, I have to ask you to leave because your black bag and your headscarf and you being here is making all the soldiers really nervous." And I really didn't know how to react at the moment, just because I'd never really been faced with anybody ever telling me something like that in my entire life. And I sort of was just, like, numbed by his reaction, just, like, left and, like, didn't know what to do. And I mean, I wish, of course, hindsight is 20/20. I wish that I'd been like, okay, well, this is my camera bag, and this is, like, I have a right to be here. And if they're nervous, they need to learn how to, like, differentiate between, like, a Muslim and a terrorist.
Afterwards, how did you kind of, like, deal with that? Did you think about it?
It definitely was on my mind for a very long time. But, like, thankfully, like, I talked to some friends about it, and they're just like, you know, it's okay, like, it happens to, and, like, he didn't know, and, like, he might have been a little bit ignorant, and it's okay. And so, like, I got over it. I think, one of the biggest things that I learned is to, like, be the best person I could possibly be, just because as, like, a person wearing the hijab, as a Muslim, I'm representing so much more than just myself. And, you know, that really, like, pushes a person to, like, you know, be on, like, their best behavior all the time, and to, like, really think about, like, an action that they're going to take, or think about the words that they're going to say, because you don't know who's going to hear them or who's going to, like, be affected by them. But it also taught me, like, how to deal a little bit. Like, you know, when you're faced with somebody, like, telling you, like, get out because of what you're wearing, it just sort of makes you wonder, okay, well, if that's to happen again, what am I going to do? Or how should I respond next time? Or things like that. And going to Ohio State, I mean, sure, I meet different people, but, like, I'm not really facing any, like, sort of difficulty in terms of the people I'm encountering regularly. I'm lucky to not have to, like, defend who I am regularly.
You're listening to Youth Beat Radio. Next up, we will learn how more than 10,000 students across the nation are rallying together to create environmental change. Stay tuned.
My name is Chloe Yan, and I'm here with Christian Arnold, a student at Ohio State and one of the coordinators of this year's National PowerShift Conference. Can you introduce the PowerShift Conference to us? What is the PowerShift Conference?
So PowerShift 2011 is a conference that was held in Washington, D.C., April 15th through 18th. And it was held at the Washington Memorial Convention Center in the middle of downtown Washington, D.C. So it was a youth climate conference. There were workshops and panels, speakers such as Al Gore and Lisa Jackson, the director of the EPA, as well as musical performances and trainings that were held regionally. So based on what area you were in, there were trainings. It's organized also by the Energy Action Coalition, which is a coalition of over 40 partners from around the country. And there was one held in 2007 and one in 2009, and this is the third one.
Can you talk about how this year's conference went?
Yeah, so this year I thought it was very successful. It was really good turnout. There were 10,000 students and youth. It was more training-based. So in the past, it's been focused on learning new things and more speakers and panelists. But this year, because there were trainings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., both Saturday and Sunday, the trainings were organized by the New Organizing Institute, which does trainings for nonprofits, community groups, and lots of other types of groups. And they organized what was the largest community organizing training ever held on that wide a scale in terms of 10,000 people. So it was really incredible, and they taught us a lot about building a movement and what that means, what your piece of the movement is, whether your skills are more towards media or networking, or it helps you develop your skills as well as create your story. So it's really about creating how you fit in the movement and then building from that. So it was really inspiring, and I think it went really well.
Were there any specific events this year that were particularly impressive or made you feel successful?
Yeah, so there's always an action component to PowerShift. In the past, in 2009, we successfully shut down the coal plant that powered the Capitol building to symbolically show how we feel about getting off of coal and having a moratorium on coal. And from that action in 2009, they actually did shut down the coal plant and replace it with a natural gas plant. So that was a really big success. And we also, that year in 2009, had the largest lobby day in history. There were, you know, over 6,000, I think, people that were lobbying their representatives and senators from their specific states. And so this year, the action components, there was a protest at a BP plant because there are a lot of organizations that were focusing on cleaning up the Gulf from the BP oil spill. So we successfully shut down BP for a day, representing, you know, how we need funding and legislation to pass to make sure things like this don't happen, as well as there was lobbying on Monday as well, and thousands and thousands of youth and students went to their representatives and senators and talked about our demands for better climate legislation.
So what issue do you think is important for students from Ohio especially?
So PowerShift is really timely for people in Ohio. We actually had the second largest number of participants at PowerShift. We had 500 students, which is incredible. I think the only state that beat us was New York. So it was really powerful seeing that many students. Also, one really great thing, you know, a lot of students don't have a lot of money, and the registration was somewhat steep. And the local Sierra Club chapter in Columbus offered to sponsor us, which was a really, really, really great help. And they were a really big part in this, and I want to thank them for that. So the Ohio Student Environmental Coalition, which is a partner of student organizations focusing on environmental issues all around the state, which I'm also on the steering committee for, organized the statewide breakout, like what we were going to be talking about, how we were going to filter all these people into, you know, their most effective and inspiring roles. So there's five issues that we're focusing on in Ohio, and they are hydraulic fracturing of oil, also known as fracking. We're going to have a working group based on that. There's a food group, which is based on food issues, so bringing together students from different campuses and communities that are focusing on community gardening or food deserts or things like that. There's also a group on coal issues, because coal is a really big issue in Ohio. We have some of the largest coal plants in the country / world, and we've worked a lot with coal in the past, so just continuing that work. And then also there's a wind farm that's being proposed on Lake Erie, so we're helping that move along. There's a working group on that. And then also transit, so implementing the 3C rail, which is a rail system that will connect Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati. So I think for Ohio students, it's really valuable to have all of these trainings and learn all of these new skills to take back with these issues. And then at the statewide breakout, we got together from, you know, schools all around the state to organize on these things together to have a really big voice.
Do you think participation in this conference promotes cooperation and collaboration between universities and college students?
Yeah, I think a lot of students, you know, and people that were at the conference really were inspired by the amount, you know, the quantity of students that were there and other people. It was just amazing to see how many other people were from all around the country, but also state. So, I noticed that when we were doing the trainings, everyone was in small groups, and those small groups stayed consistent for both 9 to 1 both days. And, you know, we try to split it up to make sure that people weren't at the same schools in the same groups. So I think they not only made a lot of friends, but I know I saw a lot of people gathering contacts, you know, somebody that's wanting to build a community garden and then another school is already doing it. So, like, collaborating on that. And it was really, really inspiring to see that happen.
Do you have other experience, former conferences that help you with this one?
I have planned. I was also one of the coordinators for PowerShift 2009 and getting students there. And that year, I believe there were around 45 students from OSU that went to PowerShift. And then also last year, there were regional power shifts, and there was an Ohio power shift, and I was a big part in planning that. I helped organize the action component, so getting students active for this march that we did around Oberlin when it was at Oberlin College in 2010. So experience really helped, because you kind of just know who to talk to, you know, what your options are.
What kind of impact do you think this has had throughout the nation?
Yeah, so the impact of PowerShift will just be, not only a surge in D.C. I mean, on Friday, the Energy Action Coalition directors went to the White House to talk to some staff about, you know, why we were here, the fact that there are going to be 10,000 people from all around the country organizing on climate issues. And they got really surprised with a meeting by Barack Obama, our president, which was amazing. They got to speak with him personally and talk about these issues and what the youth of America are looking for their future. So I think seeing what this movement can do is really inspiring. And I think that will be transcend all around the country. And I think a lot of people that were at the conference have already been organizing and working on environmental issues. And so this is kind of just another surge of energy to get people pumped up to work in their communities. But also, there are a lot of people at the conference that had never been introduced to these issues, really just went there to learn about what's going on and, like, what they can do about it. And I think those people will be really inspired as well. So I think there's going to be a lot of collaboration by, like, new and old activists, as well as, you know, kind of dynamics between local issues and national issues. Because in the past, Power Shift has been very much focused on national issues, pushing national legislation, climate change. But this conference was not only about that, but working locally. So what are the issues in my communities that are being affected? You know, how can I affect my community? So I think that the impact will be national because there were so many people working from all around the country, but also locally on individual communities.
Do you have any expectations for future conferences or even suggestions?
Power Shift is very much focused on national issues, but it also is very timely. So this one really did focus. There was a lot of talk about fracking, which is a new issue that's coming out about hydraulic fracturing. It's very new technology, something that's happening. So that was just an example of something that, you know, I don't know what's going to be happening in 2013, but I think Power Shift will depend on what's happening at the time.
Do you think this has deep meaning for the students in attendance? Do you think it influenced their life and their career?
For me personally, Power Shift is just an extremely empowering experience. Just like I've said before, just seeing the surge of people and how many people are working on the same issues, feel the same way about what's going to happen to us next year or the year after. What's going to happen to our kids? Like, how are they going to be affected by these issues? So I think what is very typical in this movement is to get really bogged down in all the bad things that are happening in the world. But this conference, Power Shift, is really just an upbringing. It really feeds you this energy that just helps you get inspired to work in your communities. And one quote that I really liked, and I think really transcends into Power Shift, that's from Van Jones, the director of Green for All, and also a leader in climate change issues and green jobs and green collar economy. He said, if you think about something, you'll sit down, but if you feel something, you'll stand up.
To learn more about Power Shift, visit wearepowership.org.
This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can listen online at youthbeat.osu.edu or email us at youthbeat@osu.edu. You can also find us on Facebook. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening. Youthbeat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio High Schools, youth groups, and universities. The program is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.